Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Under the Dome podcast. I'm Ben Belden, and I'm here joined, as always, by Danny Cunningham. Danny, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Ben?
Oh, not too shabby. Not too shabby. We both were talking about our eventful days that happened today, but we're not going to bore our listeners with that. One thing that we do need to get to real quickly is to introduce our first real guest that's going to come on and talk about like actual football with us, and that's Nate Urbach, who's writing a lot of recruiting things over at Golden Domer Daily for us. And Nate, how are you?
We've had a guest before.
I guess that was a long time ago. That was before Under the Dome.
People don't forget.
Yeah, well, Nate, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, Ben. How are you?
Oh, just tired. You know, it is what it is. I'm not too tired to talk about Notre Dame football, however. So, we were talking about how I'm a Browns fan, so I just kind of stay in the Notre Dame lane. I don't even care about the Browns anymore. So today I woke
They're
up
so for, bad
for for whatever so reason. Bad. For whatever reason, I woke up this Sunday morning just thinking about Notre Dame football and thinking about how I can't wait for next season to start already. And I don't know, there's a lot of things going on as far as Notre Dame football, even though the season is over. Since the last Under the Dome podcast was recorded, we have learned that Malik Zaire is going to transfer. We've learned that Deshaun Kizer is going pro. We've learned that Mike Sanford is on to Western Kentucky to be their head coach. We've learned that Scott Booker is fired as tight ends and special teams coach. And we've learned that Mike Elko was hired. So we've got a lot of
things. And Brian Polian, too.
And Brian Polian. How could I forget? That's a big one.
I really can't believe how eventful it's been since our last recording. Like, I mean, I know all those things happened, but I never, like, put it together that, wow, we haven't talked about any of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always good to have Brian Polian back on the good side.
That's what I said. I was a big fan of that hire. I think it'll really help out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that I didn't talk about was some of the recruiting things that have happened since then. And that's exactly why we have Nate on here. So, Nate, I know that you've got some good news, bad news as far as the recruiting process is going. Why don't you start us with some of the bad news? The Echoes was last weekend. So talk about that. Some of the, I don't know, you can start good news or bad news. Doesn't really matter, but tell us some things that we should be interested in and our fans should be as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, like you said, Echoes was last weekend, and two of the guys, Joshua Patchell, I believe is how you pronounce it. He's a defensive end out of Maryland, who many people thought at one point in the summer was an Irish Lane and then kind of backed off, partly because of grades. Everybody thought he was back on the Irish. He kind of got himself prepared in the classroom and visited Echoes. And from all things, it looked like a great visit. But he announced earlier this week to Kentucky. Wasn't necessarily a big surprise when he actually announced, as earlier in the week, it was kind of said that since his brother's a GA on the Kentucky staff and specifically defensive line, that it was going to be a Notre Dame Kentucky battle, and he ended up choosing Kentucky in the end. And then the other guy was Thomas Graham Jr. out of California. He's a cornerback that the staff has pretty much been on for 2 years, and it's kind of the same thing. He actually signed financial aid paperwork with the school, and the staff was feeling really good. And then the hiring of Taggart at Oregon, I think he had a great in-home visit with him. And I think leaving the West Coast kind of scared him off, and he ended up committing to Oregon, and he'll be an early enrollee. And that was on Friday. So two bad news on two high four-star guys that they were after. So yeah, it wasn't a great week for the Irish, but I think that they do have a chance to close out pretty well.
So looking forward, so that was the bad news. Looking forward, what really, I mean, we can talk about a lot of recruits, but can you, hone in on a couple that you're really excited about and maybe Notre Dame fans might see on the field, whether it be, you know, contributing a little bit or maybe even just like a special teams type thing, guys that we should know, if not next year, maybe the year after.
Yeah, so my favorite recruit in the class right now is Paulson Adebo. He is a cornerback. Well, actually, in the recruiting ranks, he's considered an athlete. He plays both sides of the ball. He's from Texas. I think it's Mansfield, Texas, if I'm not mistaken. And he plays wide receiver, cornerback. And the Irish staff see him as a cornerback in college. And I think that not necessarily next year, but I do think he has the highest upside of anybody in the class. And big bodies, like 6'2", probably 180, 190 right now. And I think that he's probably the best athlete in the class. I'm really excited about him going forward. Only to add on to the freshman corners that we had this year that were very good, in my opinion.
Yeah, how does that how is that going to fit in with Notre Dame having at different points four freshmen starting or seeing significant time in the defensive backfield? Where's his fit going to be?
I think he's kind of more like a Troy Pride, where he had that elite upside. I don't think he's a track runner like Pride was in South Carolina, and I think he announced not too long ago that he's going to be doing it at Notre Dame as well. But he's just kind of more of that lengthy athlete, and I think actually with Elko going to that like 4-2-5 scheme where he's running five DBs out there a lot of the time, I think there's actually a good possibility that he sees the field next year. More in a Troy Pride type role. So I don't think he'll be on the field as much as Julian Love or Dante Vaughn were. But I can see him contributing, you know, 5-10 snaps a week, and then especially on special teams.
Who do you think he would be able to leap over? Because we mentioned that Notre Dame did have four defensive backs that were freshmen on the field at the same time a lot of times this year. But you have to take that with a grain of salt because the best defensive back, at least in my opinion, was lost for the season against Nevada and Sean Crawford.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big Sean Crawford guy myself. So now I will say I do see Sean Crawford more in that slot role just because of his size.
Yeah, I think that's where he's best too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and here's to say this. I mean, Adebo does have that size to where maybe he can play safety as well if it comes to that. I do think the staff wants him at corner and sees him as a corner, but being 6'2", I mean, you can obviously say that he does have that size to play safety. I don't want to say that he'll leap over someone his freshman year, but I will say that I think he has the highest upside of all the corners that have come out the last two cycles.
So I guess what I'm hearing here is that Notre Dame has gone from, because I mean, okay, I guess we have to pump the brakes a little bit because it's not like you know, Julian Love or Dante Vaughn was elite in any sense of the word this last year. But however, they were freshmen that contributed pretty well. I don't know. I guess what I'm hearing is, and I'm hoping I'm hearing this right, is that we're going to go from being really frustrated with the corners to having that as potentially, if not next season, but going forward, that potentially could be one of the stronger points on our team, which sounds exciting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it only helps that Elko is also helped with the safeties at Wake Forest and not only was the defensive coordinator. So I think he has a really good understanding of the secondary as a whole, and that will only help.
Yeah, so speaking of Mike Elko, what are you guys' thoughts? And we'll start with Danny on this one. What are your thoughts of him as the defensive coordinator hire?
I think if you can be successful at Wake Forest doing just about anything on the football field, you have a lot of potential because that's obviously not a football school. If you can be successful at Wake Forest on the football field while other teams have your information, that definitely bodes well. So I'm excited about it. I know, Ben, he's someone that you really forecasted still during the season after BVG was fired that someone Notre Dame could possibly go after. I know you were very high on him. But I'm excited about him. I think that it's a good hire for Notre Dame. I hate the term a home run hire or that they knocked it out of the park because this isn't baseball. So that term bothers me. But I think this is very good for Notre Dame. I could not really be too much happier in any other direction. I would have, if Charlie Strong wouldn't have been offered a head coaching position anywhere, I think he would have been my ideal defensive coordinator in South Bend. But I'm definitely happy with Elko.
Go ahead, Nate.
I mean, there's not much more to say. I was sort of like how Danny mentioned that you were huge on him earlier in the year when BBG got fired. I've always been a Mike Elko guy ever since hearing about him at Wake Forest and seeing his defenses, especially when they played Notre Dame. And even though Notre Dame won like 28-3 when they played him, it seemed like he had an idea of what he was doing. So, yeah, no, I do like the term home run hire, which is kind of funny. But so I don't think they could have hired much better. Kind of like Danny said, Charlie Strong would have been a great hire as well. And that was someone that I was looking at, but it's hard to be upset with the Mike Elko hire. And I'm proud of Brian Kelly for kind of going away from what he usually does and hiring someone that he knows.
Yeah. And I was reading up on Mike Elko a little bit before we got on this podcast, and he was back in the early 90s, I believe it was. He was a safety for the University of Pennsylvania. And his coach said that he is the smartest player he's ever coached at the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League school.
That's saying a lot.
It's just saying a lot, exactly. So, and they just said that, like, his, you know, I'm a basketball guy, so I talk about people's basketball IQ all the time, but they say that Mike Elko's football IQ is just absolutely through the roof. So that was, I don't know, that was something that I was happy to hear, I guess, obviously. And then just looking at the types of things that one thing that they said was his first like graduate assistant type job was that he was coaching the linebackers at, I believe it was Stony Brook. And they were just talking about even at Stony Brook when he was coaching linebackers, he had never played linebacker before. He had to basically like learn the position so that he could teach it. And he was just so quick as far as, you know, picking up a new position and being able to teach it to people, because it's one thing to know about it. It's another thing to be able to actually teach it and teach it well. So I think that bodes well. The one thing I guess that if I had a qualm about Mike Elko is that if you look at his resume, he never seems to stay at the same place for real long. And you got to think that if he turns Notre Dame's defense around in the next year or two, that he's going to be probably then a hot commodity for a head coaching position somewhere. But I mean, that's just the nature of college football and the coaching carousel, I suppose. But
yeah,
I don't know. So it to me, I couldn't be happier.
I don't have super lofty goals. I think the one goal I have for Mike Elko is for no one on the team to say that his scheme is more difficult to pick up than Mandarin Chinese.
Yeah, that would be good.
My goal is just to have 20 plus sacks, which shouldn't be that hard.
And to that point a little bit, I was looking at Wake Forest's defensive stats. They forced, let's just say, a lot more turnovers than Notre Dame forced this year.
And that's with everyone knowing what they're doing.
Yeah. And that's also with, you know, I was starting to go through, and I didn't do this for like every single one, but at least their leading tackler, 3-star recruit, their second leading tackler and leader in interceptions, 3-star recruit. I'm really excited to see what Mike Elko can do when, I don't know, he's given 4-star, 5-star, in some case, athletes to coach. So I don't know. I think that, you know, back to Danny's Van Gorder comment real quick, I think that coaches can get real cute with scheme and things. And I mean, you can have a really great scheme, but if you don't have guys that can execute it, then it's no good. So
yeah, your scheme is only as good as your players.
Right. So I think that Elko, what he's going to bring is, you know, that simplification, I suppose, that I think Notre Dame craves on defense a little bit. Because I coach, here's an analogy I was thinking of whenever I was thinking about saying this earlier. I coach JV basketball, girls basketball. I could put in a really great 1-3-1 trapping defense, but if I don't have the girls that can react and all that, we're going to be giving up layups and we're going to lose ball games. So it's probably easier to just go to a man-to-man. That's kind of the way that I think about it as far as Mike Elko is concerned, that we're just going to have a solid defense. And, I mean, if you look at what he did, in all seriousness, yeah, probably Louisville had a strategy, had Wake Forest strategy, and I think they held the Lamar Jackson, the Heisman Trophy winner. They held him to like a touchdown in the first half. They kind of lost control a little bit in the second half. Like I said, they only had 3-star recruits. So I don't know.
Yeah, he's not coaching Niles Morgan. He's not coaching guys like that. There aren't a ton of guys with NFL potential walking through the halls there.
Yeah, guys that are there aren't offered by Notre Dame typically, which is saying something. And one thing I actually wanted to mention was I'm a big believer that Jalen Smith was used poorly at Notre Dame, and that's how good he was, considering all of us can agree that he was outstanding at Notre Dame and maybe would have been the first pick in the draft if not for his ACL injury. But I think a guy like Mike Elko, I don't think he's going to find ways to underutilize or use incorrectly players like of Jalen Smith's caliber. And that's kind of why I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and Ben and I have touched on that before at the point where BVG should not have been brought back this year, because if you have the hands-down best defensive player in the country and your unit still can't produce well, what makes you think that it's going to be better by subtracting the best player in the country? That was a big issue that I had with retaining Van Gorder after last year.
Well, it goes to say that when you have plenty of players that get drafted on the defensive side of the ball, not even just Jalen Smith, like you're mentioning, but like
Tabari Russell, Sheldon Day. I mean, they had a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball and they couldn't get it done.
Yeah. And I still think they do. Like I've been a big fan of James Onuwalu since he stepped on campus. Even when he switched positions like 8 times.
Yeah. Coming onto campus as a receiver.
But I said last year that I thought James Onuwalu was hands down the best coverage linebacker in college football. And I don't think he got to prove that in his time at Notre Dame. So I'm hoping he gets drafted and gets to prove that in the NFL.
All right. So let's move on a little bit. Another big hire was that of Brian Polian. And I can't say that I know a lot about Brian Polian other than, you know, I know who his dad is. And I know that he was – I mean, the fact that they have hired a former Division I head coach is obviously huge. He's been at Notre Dame before, obviously. So I guess I'm deferring to you guys. What do you think of Brian Polian? What do you think the effect is going to be, if any, and where that effect is going to take place? Because a lot of people have talked about, well, just the fact that the special teams was atrocious. So obviously it can't get any worse. And in the recruiting category also. So we'll start with
I'll start this off, and I think Brian Polian hire ensures that Notre Dame's long snapper will not be the special teams player of the year for the team next year. I think you can write that down. That is a blood bank guarantee. I understand Scott Daly was very good at what he did. And
John Shannon.
And never messed up. But that is inexcusable, and I can promise you that it will not happen next year. I think C.J. Sanders could take home that award because I know, Ben, you understand how highly I think of him and how electric he is, but I think he's going to find ways to really shore up the special teams. And it's definitely a big hire in recruiting, and I know, Nate, you can speak more on that. You're much more knowledgeable as far as that goes as compared to me, but it's definitely a very, very good hire for BK in Notre Dame.
Well, the good thing is they should continue the tradition of good long snappers because they John Shannon, who's going to take over for Scott Daly, was the number one long snapper in the country coming out.
I'm not disagreeing about that. I love that that's the fact, but he shouldn't be your special teams player of the year.
Let's hope not. Especially when C.J. Sanders had at least two. How many return touchdowns did he have this year? And they still –
I believe he had two, right? And he had a couple called back.
Yeah. So, I mean, he wasn't like he had a poor year, but there were some, or at least returning the football wise, but there were some fumbles and miscommunications otherwise. So yeah, he returning two alone should have made him the special teams player of the year.
Yeah. But, I think everyone would agree with that. And then you saw everything else that happened. So
yeah, exactly. On the recruiting side, I don't know if you guys knew this, but he was, pretty much the main reason they got Manti Te'o. So that makes me happy that they're bringing Brian Polian back. He pretty much spent 2 weeks living in Hawaii.
That sounds around so difficult.
Around, yeah, right? but yeah, so he was in Hawaii for a while.
Hey, if you could get a guy from Hawaii who makes his visit into South Bend during a snowstorm to come back to South Bend, you're doing something right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think he'll be a home run hire.
There you go.
Back to that for recruiting purposes alone, if not improving special teams. It's pretty well documented that Brian Polian is an outstanding recruiter. So I'm excited about that.
How much of do you think it will have any – how big of an effect will it have in this cycle, if any?
Probably not this cycle. I think I mentioned to you guys before we even started the podcast today that kind of the same with Elko, as I'm not sure that either of those two hires are going to solidify new interest for the 2017 cycle. It will only help to keep the guys they have or keep the guys that are interested but haven't committed yet in the fold. But definitely for the 2018 cycle and beyond, assuming that they're still on the staff after next year, I think that it will certainly help in that category.
Okay, so switching gears just a little bit, and I guess we're still staying in the lane as far as assisting the carousel of assistant coaches and how really it just – I mean, pretty much is what it's boiled down to is wholesale changes everywhere except for the head coaching position. I've read a lot the last couple of days of angry Notre Dame fans who – probably don't know a whole lot about guys like Mike Elko and Brian Polian really, and really don't care because they're kind of stuck in this. They're stuck in this feeling that the culture is reflective of the head coach and you can make all of the wholesale changes you want at the assistant positions. But one person that I heard or I guess saw and read what they were saying was that, really what it's saying is that the leader of the team can cast the blame everywhere, like Brian Kelly kind of has done at different times. And they don't think that it's going to change anything unless there's a change at the top. To what extent do you guys believe in that or maybe don't believe in that?
I do think that, at the top, it does start at the top. And I think that's true in just about everything. I mean, in the real world, it starts with management and ownership. If you look at the Cleveland Browns, I think Jimmy Haslam's an awful owner, and that's where it starts. And if you look at how bad of an owner he is and the way he set up his front office and blah, 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 and the team's 0-14. But I do have more faith in Brian Kelly than a lot of people do, I believe. I think he's a very good coach, and so many people call for his head. And you have to ask, okay, well, who's going to replace him? Who's going to be able to change things? And there wasn't really a name that you could come up with. Because, I mean, you can't just say Urban Meyer or Nick Saban because that's not happening. Like, you have to say a realistic name. But, I mean, I think that these hires definitely help out the staff. There's no doubt about that.
Do we think that it's going to make a a big enough change as far as just changing. Okay. All right. Let me rephrase the question. Is adding Mike Elko and Brian Polian and whoever they're going to add as the offensive coordinator, is that going to take Notre Dame from a perennial 8-5, 9-4 type team to a contender? Or is it still going to be a while before we get to that point?
The players make the team as good as they are. I do think that this will help out in recruiting, which in turn will help the team become better. I think that another big piece of this puzzle that hasn't been filled in yet is who's the offensive coordinator. We haven't touched on that, and I am a little worried that Notre Dame's going to have three new coordinators next year. That's a little concerning.
Nate, what do you think?
I'm sort of with Danny in the sense of I'm a bigger Brian Kelly fan than most. I find myself defending him more often than not. The big thing for me is Elko. With following recruiting as much as I do, outside of maybe landing that pass rusher that they should be landing every cycle, they've pretty much hit every other category pretty well. I mean, If you include last year, I think they signed 7 secondary pieces, which was the weakness outside of pass rush. And that seems to not be the issue any longer. We saw how the freshman played, and what I touched on Paulson Adebo, at least on my thoughts on how he'll be. But I think just coaching those players up and having a scheme that's not so complicated. I mean, I think we understand how good the offense can be. Brandon Wimbush, I think we can all agree, is going to be a stud. And Kaiser obviously was very good last year, and I think he was hampered a little bit by maybe some bad offensive play calling in certain circumstances this year. But he also had to score 50 points half the time he was on the field, which is an unfair thing to give your quarterback. So I think just having a defense that's going to be remotely successful, if not very successful under a guy like Elko, I think that's pretty much the key. And you can kind of say whatever you want about Brian Pullian and special teams, you know, being a huge factor. But I think the big part was the defense, even over the special teams this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I was looking up head coaches and trying to compare Brian Kelly to other head coaches in college football. And Brian Kelly, as a head coach at various levels of college football, has won 72% of the games. Even when you factor in, you know, a couple, you know, he had a 4-8 season this year, and I think one year where he was at Grand Valley State, he had like a 4-8 season.
I think the year you're thinking of, he went 5-5-1 at GVSU, and they ended up winning the Division II national title the next season. And he said earlier this year that there were a lot of similarities between that GVSU team that went 5-5-1 and this Notre Dame team.
Yes,
which I mean, take that for what it's worth. There's obviously not always going to be the same things, but take it for what it's worth.
Yes. So I don't know. So I was comparing winning percentages of Brian Kelly to some other guys, and I think Nick Saban has won like 76% of his games, not counting like the two dismal years that he had in the NFL. Just at the college level, yes. And then Urban Meyer was somewhere absurd, of course, like in the 80s. I was trying to make a point, and I wasn't able to find the numbers to make my point. But, I mean, there's not a lot of other guys that have, that have a higher winning percentage than Brian Kelly does at the college position. If you looked at Brian Kelly, like a resume where, like, the teams that he's coached – you know, are taken off, and like the name obviously was taken off, and you just looked at, you know, some of the records and some of the accolades. I think that, you know, if Notre Dame was looking for a coach and you just looked at that this year, a lot of people would be like, oh, I like that resume over there. Like, that guy's won at every single level. He's put up some numbers. I mean, his teams have put up some numbers, some impressive ones. So I'm with you guys. And I've been pretty vocal about this on Twitter and things, that Brian Kelly is, I don't know, maybe not the best coach in college football, obviously, but I think he's towards the top. And I think that, and maybe Nate can answer this question, but he has changed Notre Dame from a really bland, ordinary thing that we had under Charlie Fry.
Wow.
shout out to number 9 for the Browns.
Are you going to edit that out?
Yeah, probably. No, I'll just leave it in. Why? So we were really bland and organized under Charlie Weiss, and recruiting, especially after the whole national championship run that year, has really, and like I say, this is where I'm deferring to Nate for help, picked up. And I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I'm willing to bet that Brian Kelly recruiting classes score a lot higher than Charlie Weiss recruiting classes ever did.
That's actually interesting. I've had that argument with people before, because Notre Dame always has really good recruiting classes, no matter the coach. I think maybe outside of Willingham, they had a few bad recruiting classes with him. Other than that, Charlie Weiss had good recruiting classes. They were just all on offense. And I think you can see that with the guys that he had and put in the NFL, you know, Tyler Eifert, Golden Tate, Michael Floyd, Jimmy Clausen, whoever you want to name on those, you know. I think his only big name defensive player he ever had was Manti Te'o. And that ended up being mainly a Brian Kelly guy anyway. So what Brian Kelly has done, in my opinion, he has solidified every position recruiting wise outside of pass rushers. And that's kind of been his downfall. But everywhere else, he is significantly better or equal to in Charlie Weiss in terms of recruiting. And he has a different system. So he's not putting guys in the NFL at quarterback like Charlie Weiss did, maybe outside of Kaiser. And hopefully Wimbush too. But like his, you know, he runs the spread. He wants guys to, you know, dual threat QBs who can run the ball that, you know, Avery Davis and Everett Golson, guys like that, are probably never going to play in the NFL. But, you know, his defenses have been significantly improved over Charlie Weiss's recruiting classes.
Yeah. Okay. So, last thing, and there's still so much to talk about, but we've been talking for, boy, I don't even remember when we started, but probably close to 40 minutes now. One other hot button topic, I guess, has been Notre Dame has lost. I mean, Malik Zaire is transferring. We're going to find out where soon.
Wisconsin.
I hope it's not North Carolina.
I think it's going to be Wisconsin.
He should go. Are you serious? Baylor.
He should go to Baylor, or is he actually looking at Baylor?
He is actually looking at Baylor.
It's both. I think if he wants to play in the pros, he's got to go to Wisconsin.
I'm cool. I want him to go to Wisconsin too, but I think Baylor's going to make a run at him.
I think if he goes to Wisconsin, they're your Big Ten champs and a potential playoff team.
Interesting.
Which I would love to see, because, I mean, if 13 of the 14, if 13 different teams win the Big Ten, I'm happy. It's that 14th that just bothers me.
That's Ohio State, by the way. So
being from Ohio too, that's rough.
Dude, it's the worst.
But anyway, back to my point, I guess, is that Malik Zaire is leaving, and Deshaun Kaiser is leaving, and Torrey Hunter is leaving, and gosh, I don't even remember who else. But there's been four or five guys that we've found out that are leaving Notre Dame. Devin Butler is another one that I forgot that I wasn't really even thinking of.
I don't think anyone was counting on him coming back, though.
You shouldn't think of him.
Right. But I don't know. I've heard a lot of people talking about how the fact that, you know, these guys aren't exactly raring to go to come back and play for Brian Kelly. To me, and I'll just give my opinion on this first, to me that's just completely silly. I mean, Deshaun Kaiser's got a lot of money sitting right in front of him. Malik Zaire wants a place that's going to tell him that he's going to be the starter, and I don't think that Brandon Wimbush – I don't know that he can win a quarterback battle over Brandon Wimbush, given the fact that Malik Zaire really isn't exactly experienced, and Wimbush has 3 years of eligibility left, and Zaire has one. And then Devin Butler is a different story. So I think I don't know. Like, to me, everything that I read and heard about this Notre Dame team was that Brian Kelly never lost the team, even I guess through the trials and tribulations of 2016 that, you know, we kind of hope to forget about as soon as possible.
Well, and to speak on that, if you look at 7 of their 8 losses, how close were those games? The only game they really, really got blown out was USC. Everything else was a touchdown or closer.
It's like right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, to me, that thought process is silly to me. And I know that it's just something that a lot of Notre Dame fans that, I don't know, maybe are more surface fans and just are trying to think of ways that they can knock Brian Kelly. They just kind of go to that. And I don't think that's fair. And I assume you guys think the same, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think you can pretty much point to a lot of different things for that and kind of call bull crap. It's a really weak quarterback class entering this year, and it looks like Mitch Trubisky might not even enter. So there's a good chance Kaiser's the number one guy, and there are a lot of question marks right now, with at least a lot of NFL experts thinking that he's going to be like at least ready right away. So, I mean, I think it's a really smart financial decision for him to leave this year and not wait till next year. The staff wants Wimbush over Zaire. They would choose Wimbush over Zaire, not necessarily as the starter next year, but they would much rather lose Zaire than Wimbush. That to me, that makes a lot of sense. John Montellus, did he ever play at Notre Dame? I mean, it's not an insult to the guy, but like he never played. So right. him leaving for another position, he just wants to play for his fifth year. I mean, there's plenty of guys that happened to. They're never a starter. They went to Notre Dame. They want to play for their fifth year.
Jake Golic did the same thing playing at. Yeah, he played at Cincinnati. He wasn't
exactly, and he's a Golic. So I
mean, yeah, he's a legacy, and he bounced.
Exactly, and Devin Butler. I mean, I'm not even sure the staff wanted him back with the off the field issues.
I think he needed a change of scenery. I agree with you, and whether or not the staff wanted him back, I think he needed a fresh start. Just, I mean, it's not really a fresh start, but just like a new place to try and be successful. And if you look at Torrey Hunter, is he going to be successful playing baseball? More than likely not.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Is he going to be able to make some money playing baseball? Yeah, it's a financial decision. He's going to go play baseball for a couple years, make a little bit of money. I forget what his signing bonus. He does have his degree. He'll be able to make a little bit of money, and then he'll go get a real job. Because is he going to be an NFL receiver? Probably not.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I actually thought Hunter had a pretty good chance of being at least a decent NFL receiver and getting drafted just based on combine numbers and different things like that. But his dad is a borderline Hall of Famer in the MLB. And he has been very vocal about concussions and not really being a big football guy. And yeah. I think it's pretty easy to see that, you know, he was probably in the ear of his son.
Without a doubt.
And his son might have even rebelled for a long time. I think his dad even said he wished he didn't play in college.
Well, especially after he broke his leg in the during practice for the All-American Bowl coming out of high school. And I think this decision was made on September 4th.
Yeah, no doubt. And that concussion against Texas that was the targeting that wasn't called
September 4th
didn't help either. Oh, my bad. Yeah.
real quickly, one thing, Nate, you mentioned Mitch Trubisky might not declare. I'm confused because isn't North Carolina trying to land Malik Zaire and in doing so probably trying to tell him that he's going to be the starter? I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm just saying confusing headlines coming out of Chapel Hill there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always thought he would. A lot of people think he might be the first quarterback taken in the draft if he does, but everything I read has said that he hasn't made up his mind, and I've actually read some reports that he's leaning on coming back, and that might actually be why North Carolina has kind of softened their stance on Zaire, because I don't think he ends up at North Carolina anyway. I'm not saying he will or won't stay, but I don't think it's a final decision on his part, and I hope he stays.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to play against Malik Zaire. That just sounds like not that I want to play against Mitch Trubisky, but I don't know. But what I was going to say is that people up here in Cleveland love him because he's from Cleveland, and people think that he has this quote like before the season started that said that the Browns were going to win the Super Bowl this year. And so people are just, I don't know. They
should hate him for that.
Well,
they should hate him for that. He obviously has no offense. He has no evaluation talent. So
Cleveland loves blind optimism.
He's from 45 minutes outside of downtown Cleveland. He grew up a Browns fan. You know, if he's played in Browns Stadium before in high school, like if he could play for a team, it would be the Browns. So the kind of he gets us factor with Browns fans is super high on Mitch Trubisky. Like he gets the Browns fans, and that's what excites people here. I truthfully don't want the Browns to take him. I don't think he's going to be good in the NFL.
It's funny. I've seen a lot of Browns fans that seem to hate Kaiser.
That's because
there's so many Browns fans that just don't like Notre Dame.
Is it because he's from Toledo?
No. I don't think that plays into it at all because there are a lot of Browns fans from Toledo.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Like Toledo, I mean, a lot of people in Toledo like Michigan and the Detroit Tigers and the Red Wings, but they really don't like the Lions. I agree, but like the Lions aren't a big draw there. Like I know people that live in Toledo and they like the Tigers, they like the Red Wings, they like the Browns though. They don't like the Lions. That's the way it works. The Browns have a bigger draw out towards Toledo than any of the other Cleveland teams do.
Oh boy. Yeah, I lost. I don't know. And the other thing I think with Browns fans is that they saw how Brady Quinn worked out with the Browns. And
oh, Lord.
It wasn't great. So I get that a lot whenever I say that, well, Brady Quinn was terribly developed in the NFL, and I think he was. But people are always quick to say, why do you want to draft a Notre Dame quarterback? We saw how that worked before, as if all, you know, as if, you know, going to the same school like 4 or 5 years apart has any correlation on how good you're going to be in the NFL.
I want to draft a Notre Dame quarterback because he would be the prototypical superstar in the AFC North.
There you go.
Why? I mean, he fits the AFC North perfectly.
Yeah, I kind of agree. But I don't know.
Or the NFC North, he can just go play for the Bears. That'd be nice.
Hey, I'd root for Deshaun Kizer if he played for the Bears. I wouldn't hate that. But hey.
That's who I want, so.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Anything else you guys want to talk about? We've talked for quite a while here, so we probably need to wrap up.
I don't care.
Who goes first, Deshaun Kizer or Deshaun Watson?
Deshaun Kizer.
Kizer.
I don't think Watson's that good.
I think Kizer's going to blow up the combine with his arm strength.
And his size.
Yeah.
He's going to measure well. He's going to test well. He runs hard. He's bigger. He's going to have a great combine, and that's going to absolutely skyrocket his stock. He could end up going as high as 2 or 3.
You don't think he's going to go 1 to the Browns?
No, if the Browns are smart, they'll draft Myles Garrett.
Yep.
I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate it.
And then draft the other guy, whoever they have, with the Philly pick.
Yep,
they'll draft a quarterback with the Philly pick.
If they could get Kizer, if Kizer somehow falls to 9, I think that would be – or wherever that Philly pick is. I know as of right like now, it's number – as of now, it's number 8 after the 4 o'clock games, I believe.
After the 4 o'clock games.
It could change tomorrow depending on what Carolina does. It could move to 7. But if you could get Kizer with that pick, I think the Browns would do that every time.
All right. Well, make sure you follow at @NDDomerDaily on Twitter. You can find all of our work on there. Make sure you check out GoldenDomerDaily.com. I don't know. That's about all I got. So from Danny, Nate, and I am Ben, we are signing off, and we will talk to you next time.